Okay. My mother is a ghost town, condemned and boarded up, where insurance burns carve gaping vacancies. She is where people gathered and roared the night she killed the renegade, where I saw her before she was lost to fire. She is the wide welcoming avenue, soul-sucking welfare depression, the hooker, the alcoholic, struggling and dying. Sometimes my mother is Doris Day and Rock Hudson in Saturday morning dime shows where popcorn is free. Sometimes she's the canal, clean and full, the breeze rippling clarity and holy water. Sometimes she's skipping on sidewalks. She's bulging with life, breaking through her cement shroud. She is the fog, lifting ice-cold feet off bruised, dewy grass. She is smooth and brown, with hair as black as coal, full of mystery, swordplay, and song. She is whole, no longer vacant, by choices made for and by her. She is full of light and comfort. My mother is forever lost in time and all that held her memory, exploited and stripped of her treasure, that I, torn from her early embrace, still seek.
That was fantastic, Pam. Thank you. I just got distracted there with admitting somebody. So next up, could we have Francis Cullum, please? Cullum.
Hello. I think I was last time I was here. I did a poem about an alabaster bust. I'll just find a picture of it to prove that I do have an alabaster bust that I found that I bear an uncanny resemblance to. There he is. I've got another poem about that one. It's a shorter poem, this one though, and I'll just bring it up. Right, Gloveless. After visiting the British Museum, I meet a man who tells me alabaster absorbs fingerprints. That's why curators wear white cotton gloves. I think of all the times I've handled you glovelessly, all those fingerprints drunk up by your thin, semi-permeable flesh, my careless marks, your headaches. Could a forensic archaeologist split open your head and identify me? Or was it simply a figure of speech I simply accepted at face value? Still, I'm sorry for touching you. Those sebaceous cysts that crawl, the knotted migraines that pool like a tenuous metaphor, as I try to get my head around it, the sense we made. Still, I'm just as clueless as you and dumb. That's the end of that one. Thanks.
Thanks, Francis. Next up, we'll have Kemi George Simpson, please.
Sorry, hello. I'm just finding the poem.
Well, good.
Okay, I thought because it's Black History Month, I'd just read something that has a bit of a theme of that. So this is a poem called The Migrant and the Bin Man. Late again, robe-draped migrant, tights tied on top of her head, sheltering braids. Hard to get the bush out of the girl, even in Carrigtool. Feeling like the black in a negative stereotype, hoping for compassion. The uproar, as startling as the odour, but safe on paved roads, a non-military vehicle approaches. He casually carts the refuse, overlooking the indisputable stench, and yet, she is the curiosity. She drags it from the garden, up the side of the house, onto the road, then mimics an African sprinter, retrieving kitchen cluttering excess. rubbish that does not need to dwell in open sewers. Surrounded by clatter and clutter, his patience overwhelms. She wells up with gratitude's tears. No more can be accommodated in this limited container. Weeks of waste have found rescue, emptying space for more exhausted essentials. People hope for dignity and a redeeming end, but the path of those who seek asylum is cursed for so many, like waste being disposed of. He quietly takes the wheelie bin from her hand and then affably agrees to take more crap from her. A relaxed generosity stills anxiety. She feels indebted, though the bin bill is paid. Maybe her hue and history invoke guilt, or maybe he's just kind. She was a professional, organizing a class and a syllabus with ease. Her household chores are vicious wars fought by fought family members. The scale and persistence of daily tasks defeat the dejected. They will meet again early morning amidst the multicolored garbage. Neighbors will punctually pattern pavements with appropriate wheelie bins. Hers may never be punctual and will predictably overflow. Some will meet this with their justified contempt, apathy, offspring to the unworthy. The bin man is cautious. He has a tendency to meet the migrant with a thoughtful generosity.
Well,
thank you, Kemi. And next up, we'll have Lauren O.
Thank you very much. So this one is a bit of a work in progress. So I'm hoping by reading it out to you guys, I'm going to be inspired as to what final edits need to be made. So here we go. It's called Gerta Drislig, which is in Irish, and it means field of thistles. Kerry Monday, questions print, garda meet, solicitor, paper notice, phone neighbour, certs and copies, call engraver, pub deposit, aunts and uncles. I feel you sitting outside the back door on that cast iron metal chair, back-to-back cigarettes burning away, your head in your hands until you notice me. Then you sit up and take a drag and ruffle your forehead as if to straighten the thoughts, your eyes bloodshot and sunk like you haven't slept since she died. You manage a half smile and ask, "All right, love." Text auctioneer, whiskey, brackets, Willie, collect ashes, meet engineer, Gerta Drislig, sell motorbike, scan signature, price skip, charity clothes, gut attic. The scarf was yours, but I'd never seen you wear a scarf. It was up around your neck in such a way that I expected a cigar and brandy to be in the box with you. But all that was in there was you, that red and white patterned scarf trimmed with black and whatever else you were wearing, I can't remember. All I could see was the scarf. Or should I say an ascot tie, as I was later informed.
Thanks, Bobby.
Inquest report, pay St. James, probate court, sale documents, copy deeds, Kerry last trip, Banna Beach, keys handover, pack and post, flight Vancouver. But when I needed you most, you still came straight from the grave, and not even a real grave, but a box full of ash in a hole in a wall. You come to me in the rain as I dance and I cry, headphones blasting, drowning out reality with nothing else existing other than what is now within me. You get up on the planters and railings and dance like the whole city can't see you, and the rain falls straight through because it doesn't know that you were there, but I do. We dance until I can't tell what is wet from what, and the end notes of pumped up kicks echo in the newly birthed silence in my head. Thanks.
Thanks, Lauren. Excellent stuff. Yeah, great. And next up, we'll have Colm Scully, please.
Hi, sorry, I wasn't ready there. I, as I said there, I was at the haiku workshop the other night, so I'm kind of into haikus. So at the moment, there was a number of people on there actually at it. I know that Margaret and Mags. So here's a couple of haikus, and they're all COVID related. Not to get the press around, but they're all COVID related haikus. Just a few of them. Communion dressed twirls in the Halloween section. Everything out of season. Winter edges in over the lonesome houses. pubs closed again. Outside a COVID church, you receive communion. Wind catches the host twice.
Thanks, Colin.
Excellent, Colin.
We have Ada Miles. Sorry.
That's me already. So fast. I didn't... Oh no, I accidentally closed the poem that was... It's gonna... could you go back to me in, after the next reader?
Sure.
I accidentally closed everything.
No problem. Okay. So instead, we will have Margaret O'Regan, if you're ready.
What I'm going to do is read this one again. It's The Devil Wears Debenhams. It's an acrostic poem, and the reason being that tomorrow the Debenhams workers are being dragged through the courts, in the four courts of Dublin. The receiver for Debenhams, KPMG, are endeavouring to get an injunction to prevent them from entering any premises. They've entered three so far, and they've only stayed for three nights and come out again very peacefully and very safely. Anyway, the devil wears Debenhams. These Debenhams workers have paved the way every minute of every day. Dignified women and men are they. Evil devils in Debenhams they face. Villainous vultures in boardroom culture imagine they can, with their despicable plan, lord it over the workers they slammed. But workers thrown on the scrap heap erupt and fight back, everyone so determined in this first COVID strike. A win for these workers is a win for us all, refusing to kowtow, not taking a fall, staying the course in all 11 stores. Debenhams directors, contemptible, covetous cretins, each and every one a grasping, avaricious louse. By standing up together wherever they gather, every one of these workers will go hell for leather. Non-ending solidarity at home and far afield has enveloped these brave fighters in a force field and revealed a strength and revelation so supremely divine, making them the spearhead of revolt during COVID, standing firm and steadfast in face of corporate greed.
Yeah. Thank you, Margaret. Long may they stand. And you might let us know if there's any kind of a fund in case they do get, you know, have to pay money or whatever. Anyway, so we will go back now to Ada Miles, if you're ready. Are you ready, Ada?
Yeah, I'm ready. What's just happening? I'm ready. So if we're going COVID poems, I have one COVID poems. I just wrote it when I was really angry because in Ukraine we're having piking up figures of stats because of people not wearing masks or believing in magic. When I'm like that, I don't know how do they use condoms, and I'm really wondering because many people around and many people without masks, I hate that. So it's an angry poem called Cover Your Face. Cover your face. That means you. That means nose too. That means yeah, face. All of it, please, or else it will spread. Ah, make me mad with such ease. And as it was a short poem, I'll do another poem also about hate, actually, but this time it's about a vacuum cleaner. I just imagined a vacuum cleaner unhappy. It just came to me as one image, and I dug into it, and I thought, what would be that life like? And it's a short poem anyway. A vacuum cleaner. Oh yeah, and it's an experiment because I never used slant rhymes before, and I decided to use slant rhymes here. A vacuum cleaner hates its life because, of course, it sucks. No punctuation to here, cause to sort of highlight facts. A vacuum cleaner damns its life as vacuum cleaner grafts, as dawns to evenings and to nights turn shamelessly in shifts. A vacuum cleaner prays to Claude, the god of cleaner stock, that soon his being, please, be seized. His honor is a freak. And it's ambiguous too, so we can sort of play around with how you understand a poem. That's all.
Thank you, Ada.
Thanks.
I actually changed the Hoover bag today, so you.
Well, I'm glad to have been of relation.
Rightio. So now we will have Dan Johnson, please.
Hi, guys.
Hey.
The only thing she might benefit from knowing in this poem is the word skitch, which is like this skateboarding term for when you grab onto a car while you're skateboarding and you kind of let yourself be towed by the car. I've never done it, just seen it. Anyway, it's called Parking Lot. There we are, emerging from the trail, as though the shady wooded path connecting our neighborhood to the back of Fieldstone Shopping Center were a womb, a suburban chrysalis filled with the myths of marijuana, Bud Light, and blowjobs. We're walking out of the bushes, passing past the dumpsters through the parking lot to the Down Under Cafe, braving the post-apocalyptic tarmac haze of the parking lot in summertime. We watch the loitering teenagers kickflip off the low curb. They smoke cigarettes, wear beanies despite the mid-July heat. One of them, dressed in all black, skitches a mom's hatchback as she drives towards the exit. He passes us, crouched on the skateboard, hand gripping the underside of the bumper, his face pimpled, pale, and wild in the act. I think of how hot the car metal must be. Even then, I have a sense of impropriety, aware of the trick is what my father would refer to as a bonehead move. The mom breaks, gets out, blonde and screaming, and the kid hops off the board and rejoins his friend on the curb. What the hell do you think you're doing? She's shaking, outraged. The sun glints violently off the storefront's glass windows, the broadsides of parked cars, and I have a feeling that that's not a question that anyone in the parking lot has an answer to. That it's not a real question at all. Thank you.
Thank you, Dan. You can see Pam has left a little comment there, tarmac haze and pimpled pale in the act. People are riffing off your poem there. And next we will have the lovely Susanna Trifoletti, please. Oh, you'll need to unmute yourself there, Susanna. Good stuff.
Okay, so this poem is called The Half Night. I steal the cigarette from between your fingers for a puff, for the sake of flirting. I don't smoke either. The soft blanket on that white morning in my bedroom and the obstination of my dog's breath under the door. Did you really bring that stinky chicken roll in the bedroom? The noise of the plantago's heads are bumping on the plastic of my sandals. A snare drum announcing my feet. You're the last man I saw asleep. The last deep voice I laughed with when the drunk man fell asleep on his sandwich in Lennox. Those two pigeons we saw curled up in the cold night were balancing on a thick wire. How do they do that? Did they choose each other, or did they just join together for the sake of warmth? I don't close my eyes while nakedness surprises me, and I'm balancing my weight on the mattress next to you, pondering the shades of your ginger hair, the cliche of meeting a musician one night. I love Mingus too, and wow, that story of the clown, that could be me, trying to keep the hate of our laughter so that I don't lose your undivided attention. I'm half awake of my wire, and fearing the morning arriving too soon, I notice a polite stranger in my bed. I watch you brushing your teeth and gently folding your toothbrush in cellophane. You do it as if you were handling a delicate flower, a dear picture from when you were a child. You're gone. In the gray and cold Sunday morning, under a night that wanted more out of lovers, and a moon that was so small and clear to be picked like a pea. Yeah.
Thank you, Susanna.
Very good. Thank you, Linda.
Next up, we'll have Catherine Ronan.
Hi. I wrote this poem for the late Derek Mahon. It's a short poem. It's called We Share the Night. You get up, brother, make the day look easy. I have been sweeping words into the wind all night. I am your ambition in a dress, catching the earth left-handed. Moon in the soul, mouth open, I comb your hair, sing you to sleep. Thank you.
Thank you, Catherine. It's nice to remember Derek Mahon. Yeah. He's an elderly poet, a really brilliant poet who passed away last week or the week before. So nice to remember him, Catherine. Thanks for that. Next we will have Mags Creedon, please.
Hi, it's a tiny bit dark because we were writing the subject of penance, and I have a little bit of a recurring theme about disenfranchised children. My own have known love and have used their chances. And this is just for the other children. So I'll break into song at the end if I can. Penitential hints. In hobnail boots and short pants, Unsagart gave him penance, made him divulge wicked thoughts, queer dreams and nicking threepence. Says he, some sins are unforgivable. Don't violate a sanctum nor dance in a loved one's grave nor succumb, young man, to the carnal. Alas, the young boy speaks. Bless me, father, for I whipped a barley twist, a penny bar, some of the golf ball chewing gums and the gobstoppers from the plastic goldfish jars, told a porky to the teacher. Took a spin on Conjo's bike, but there's a grand view from the big bridge, and standing on the pedals on the high nail issue, I'm like Binhor's finest image. Remember the big long words of confession. Oh my God, I'm heartily sorry. Ten Our Fathers and Hail Marys, jail the cardinals, the venial sins spared grudgingly. Out he goes on bony knees, kneels on a splintered kneeler. A dirty looks from cuts of artery. He reaches for his trusty stock, it's not right for his schnozzer. And he's there much longer than all the other penitents, because his penance list took way more time. Child, purgatory, limbo for the innocents. Seeing the furious fires below and the silver clouds above. The King of Kings' crown glitters where he'll never see it, on his back street, starved of love. Little lost ones go to limbo, where they play their waiting game. Waiting rank, a waiting number, so they'll fit in just the same. Stateless in their timeless place, faceless pass through ports. Can you file and save me? I'm gentle, I won't hurt. Mommy is the nanny state. Bernardi is my auntie. Robinson sometimes comes to the rescue. Heartbeats, wrong pace, wrong places. Cause there are so many lost ones. Some are wealthy beyond dreams, but impoverished by outdated codes. They're just like us, it seems. Free me from my fence of glass, from barbed wire and window panes, from hard beds in rooms that hum and groan. Detention spans our pain, but I can dream of soft embraces of my name in a roll call. I can dream of loving faces who may find me after all. Chinawil.
Thanks a million, Mags. Lovely singing as always. So we have three more people left that have signed up, but I realize there are other people that haven't signed up. Have they signed up? Okay. Okay. Well, okay. The one person that the question around is Melissa Massimo Moreno. Melissa Moreno. If you'd like to read, you might put your name in the chat box. Oh, are you ready to read now?
I did.
Okay.
I have two poems that I would like to share with you, if that's okay. Okay. So the first one is an English version of a poem from my first published book. It's called La piel de la oruga, so it's the skin of the caterpillar. Oh. The title is Yellow Dust in the Night Wind, to Sus. The house was filled with yellow dust. It was autumn. The lights of the last day were beating on the window. I faked my own absence with a roar, ferocious as the ones which are skinned when blood boils and streets darken. I was holding the tremor between my fingers, animal in heat. When I brought the bodies together, the fragrance, the claspers of the sex, until my hands were cramped with their soft sequins. You came dodging the wires, a glider made of bone of falling. You came to die inside your female, to spread your seeds over the earthquake before dropping to ashes or rags. But you couldn't, neither could I, find the veins of the leaves, the formula against forgetfulness. I give you back to the air with a kiss that I blow between your wings beyond your death. I caress the scar on the tree where you hid your soul, yellow, the bite of the flowers. I pour my eyes in the sky of fire, cadaverous pulp of older stars, like children who devour the flesh of their ancestors, their gesture. I tremble. You fade like the tree that disappears beneath its own shadow, lying in the sun. I write your trace on the poem's land. I open my hands, yellow dust in the night wind. I see you fly. And the other poem is from my third book, thanks, The Joke, a tribute to Joker. So it's a tribute to the film Joker. Bathroom dance. Run like wind tossing a coin towards the last door open to decide what's right or wrong. The fathomless night embraces the poor, the dark, the homeless. Fatherless creature run out of breath, fast as a shooting star. Growing shadow of a man, such a clown, climbing up the wall, such a creeping fig, a giant, tossed to the wind. Leave behind the bonfires. Do not look back. Never go back. Hold to your new pal, bang, and dance, dance, dance. Arms wide open. Seize your act of resurrection. Die as you were, broken. Kill that man, make up your steady smile. My new face is peeping out. He's now looking at me. Pain begins to glide and glow. Who pulls the strings of motion? Who pulls the trigger of fate? Nobody. Thank you.
Oh, Melissa, it's great that you could join us all the way from Buenos Aires, and hopefully we see you again. Next up,
I hope so. Yeah.
Brilliant, Melissa. Yeah.
So next up, we will have Michelle Delay. Mm-hmm. Apologies, guys. I thought I was unmuted there, but I wasn't, and I was blabbing away into the ether. But I think Michelle might have just left the room for a minute because she was there a second ago, so no doubt she'll be back any minute now. So instead, we will have Sue Blue, Rosalind Blue.
Okay, right. Yeah, thanks very much. Lovely to hear the poetry flowing. Yeah, we were talking at the beginning, and someone actually, Doc Jannings, mentioned the old poem by Goethe, Der Erlkönig, which he worked with in his own schooling. And I did my own translation of that poem. Now, this goes back again to my grandmother performing it in the kitchen and me becoming hooked to, I think, performance poetry. That's what it was, really. She kept that poem in her mind, all in her memory all the time, from school to the end of her life. So I translated it earlier on, and I will just do the English version because it's quite a long poem. Yeah, I hope you like it. This is my version. The Elfin King, who rides so late through the withering night. Is it the father with his dear child? He firmly holds the boy in his arm, gripping him safely, keeping him warm. My son, why hide your face in fear? Oh, father, the Elf King, can you not see? The Elfin King with his trail and crown, that's just a wisp of wind, that's just a wisp of mist, my son. My dear sweet child, come away with me. Most wonderful games I'll play with thee. By the beach grow many colourful flowers, and you'll see my mother's golden gowns. My father, and can you not hear what Elfin King's quietly promising me? Be calm, stay calm, my dear child. The wind is rustling dry leaves with a sigh. Oh, handsome boy, will you come with me? My daughters will take good care of thee. My daughters will lead the nightly round, will dance, sing, and sway you until you sleep sound. My father, and my father, and don't you see there the Elfin King's daughters in their dark lair? My son, I can see it quite sharp. The old willow trees shimmer grey in the dark. I love you. I'm charmed by your elegant poise. And if you're not willing, I'll take you with force. My father, he's grabbing my arm. The Elfin King has done me harm. The father is horrified, riding with haste, holding the groaning child firmly embraced, arrives at the court by the skin of his teeth. In his arms, the child had been taken by death. Thanks very much.
Thank you, Sue.
Yeah.
Okay, so Michelle Delay, we missed you a little minute ago. So if you are ready now, we'd love to hear a poem from you.
Thanks, Rosie. Sorry, yeah, I got cut off there for a sec, guys. I'm gonna read this poem. I want this poem to be a little bit of a nod or a salute to the two women, Yvonne Farrell and Shelley McNamara. They're two architects of Grafton Architects who won the Pritzker Prize this year, which is often referred to as the sort of Nobel Prize equivalent. And they're the fourth and fifth women to ever win it in 41 years. And there was only one other Irish recipient in 1982. So it's kind of something nice to be celebrated this year. So this poem, it's called There Is No Such Thing as a Line. It's just a nod to them. A line, a meaningless thing. Not in or out of the realm of the real, we do not think in lines. It is on the verge of being unrendered a word, clutching at the roots of the flax seeds for meaning. Ever since the Latin lined the coats of the woven linen, frequency in a zigzag scrapes the length and breadth of places heard. I remember where I went to when you sang. I remembered where I was when you stopped. The stroke of chalk on a blackboard spreads the compact shells of minute marine beings onto sheets of slate. It has a thickness, a layer of life lifted from a stick by the force of a shoulder, elbow, or a wrist. Smeared, never quite onto the stone, but staying nevertheless until stroked away. Line, even when born to pixels of light, stacked up or spilled across the screen, in a space that consumes none. You share nothing with the crooked horizon until your axes collapse you to 0 degrees, until you become obsolete. Thanks, guys, and thanks for coming back to me, Rosie.
I'm very glad I did, indeed. Yeah, it's a beautiful poem. You should maybe try and send that to those ladies if you can. I'd say they'd be well chuffed to get it. So now we have 4, 5 readers left. So if we could have Ciarán McCarthy now, please. If you're ready, you ready?
Yeah. What's the crack? Can everybody hear me okay? Yeah, sweet. Yeah, perfect. Really nice to hear your words, and it's really cool that there's so many people from all over the spot able to contribute their words to the evening. Very nice to hear you. Buenos Aires and South Africa and all sorts of places. So good to do a bit of traveling in your imagination, even if you can't travel. At the moment, this is a poem. Yeah, I probably wrote it a couple of weeks ago, maybe two or three weeks ago. I'm at 80% every time, full steam ahead is called for. At 60, I'm a coaster, one more paranoid boaster, looking over boat shoulders, clear as mud, I'm getting colder. Wouldn't be your martyred soldier to roll away your boulder. I can't wait till I am older, when you won't dare look at me like that, and I'm too good laughs off a heart attack and chewing flax for snacks. And then you won't be so robust with your who did what's and your there's that for that, making a fuss and doling slaps. Go take a nap. Make entry through the swinging flap, rudimentary how your tittles tat, spend a century spilling wax and never build a candle. Your mind's hung up on passing fat, streams of flying off the handle, wants only to lay low and flat and take pictures of the scandal. And I can't be making points afresh to suit your sharpened angle. Grapevine has it you should head west where ideals tend to dangle. Thank you.
Thank you, Ciarán. Oh, yes, so we all need one of those every now and then. So we'll have Doc Jennings next, please. Doc Jennings.
Okay. This is an Ars Poetica poem I wrote 4 years ago. In it, there's a reference to the Brides of Dawn, which makes reference to the gods and goddesses of ancient cultures, which sometimes included a goddess of the dawn. And once a year, they would have a ceremony in which the image of the goddess of dawn would be married symbolically to the image of their primary god. So that's the reference. Poetry speaks of mysteries within the soul, mysteries no thought may uncover and no guess can reveal. It is a flame in the heart, an understanding of the whole, and a step in the known toward the unknown. It is a flash of lightning and a never vanishing song chanted by the brides of dawn. It is a secret found between the thought in the poet's mind and the throb in the reader's heart. It arises when the secret thoughts of the poet and the manifestations of the multiverse become one. Until then, it hides in the poet's thoughts until it surrenders to paper. Thank you.
Thank you, Doc. And next up, we will have Massimo Lavelle, please.
Hey, everybody. Thanks again for having me. It's always a huge honor. So, with a child's affection, I look on my world in reflection. See, I still remember when heaven was never a place in some other dimension. Memories I rest my head in, looking back seem like an ancient invention. I seek for the place where they're kept in search of the face that creates their impression. I speak from my heart in confession. I tried out my darkness for testing. The universe taught me a lesson by cleaning the garden that I made a mess in. Now, when I'm afraid of progressing, I'm guided by grace, though I pray for protection. Sometimes I'll wait for a blessing, but then it just comes when I don't pay attention. It's like someone above me who loves me, or someone below me who knows me, like someone beside me inside me, a part of a whole when seen wholly. Who handles my breath, makes my heartbeat dance in my breast? Who takes my command when I rest and stays awake when I fold my hands on my chest? Who keeps me while I sleep? Who sows seeds I don't see but still reap? Who dreamed this world and gave me a peep just to embrace me back to the deep? But the world is still spinning, so I turn round and round just to fit in. I can't house the house that I live in, but where I am home is the house of the living. If even the heavens and earth did not exist till remembered from birth, doubting the self, may the spell be reversed and question your purpose instead of your worth. They say to see the whole universe, have to learn to see it in you first. I guess it's not a big secret, but it's yours if you can keep it. Our flaws are not blasphemy. We only are who we have to be. The world is a godly anatomy. All of our stories are part of its tapestry. So as you just love and live actually, who you are meant to be, you will be naturally. We travel to see that what is as wise as what we would imagine should be. So no matter how broken your heart is, as long as it's beating, at least you're not heartless. Even our positive power is harnessed by finding the spark in our negative charges. Sometimes when just being you seems the hardest and the gap from your dreams to the real seems the farthest, try to leave holes for some grace where your guard is if God needs something to mold to be an artist. See, we are all works in slow progress, growing towards the light in slow process. evolved by a consciousness conscious beyond all our concepts and constructs. Like an invisible genius, silently guiding the choices it leaves us, letting us fall as we fail by our reasons to reach us and pick us back up with the pieces. Because we are all children of a great force, together in this world on a strange course. A dream we can all forever aim towards is just recognizing we are all from the same source. All right, peace and thank you.
Whoa. That's the business now. The real deal.
Thank you so much. Yeah, I'm not really one for religion. I question a lot, but I think I might go to Church of Massimo if there ever was. So thank you. And now we will have Augustina, please.
Hi, everyone. Can you hear me? Brilliant. Okay. This is... So I have a friend who is mostly bedridden, and she shared a few words. And so I wanted to share a few thoughts as well with all of you. Constantly releasing jaw, shoulders, tension building up. Releasing, building, crying, sighing. Finally sharing, not so much daring. Bored of being inclined to reclined. Constant pain, up a notch. Hodgepodge spasms, slightly less. Numbness cushions much distress. I digress, I must confess. In my cocoon, in my mess, I'm melting, unraveling, sticking myself back together. Childlike sticky tape and glue pen. Will it be like this forever? Then I took a moment which wasn't completely overwhelming to feel the raw sugar jar. Avoiding admonishment at my failure to give it up, accepting my limits while knowing when to push, no pressure from outside, with help across the divide, I can keep going. I never know when everything will change for better or for worse. My head hurts, tension in the jaw, a grimace more and more. Writing helped me smile. I also sulked a while, and now I'm grinning as if I'm winning. And that's by my friend Elaine. Thank you.
Thank you, Augustina, and your friend Elaine. I hope she hears your beautiful reading of her work. I know she's not with us here on the Zoom, but perhaps she's able to listen on Facebook. And if you are listening, Elaine, that was fantastic. Keep writing, keep sobbing, and it'll all make some kind of sense along the way for you. I certainly hope so. I know there's a lot of people in a similar situation out there, and your words, no doubt, will help. So fair play. And thank you, Augustina. That was a lovely reading. So to take us away for the end of the night, can we please have Emily Davis Fletcher.
Hi, thank you. I just want to say quickly that the Conroy Literary Center is having their literary festival the 5th through the 8th of November. There's some free events, different workshops. I'll actually be reading with a few other poets on the 7th of November at 11 a.m. It's an early poetry reading here, but for you all, it's later in the day, so that's better. That is better. I'm a little shocked at how early it is. Okay, I'm going to read a poem that actually came from a writer's workshop at the center by Brooke McKinney. So if you can get the chance to take any workshops by Brooke McKinney or anyone else at the center, it's totally worth it. Okay, the poem is When You Knock on My Door. And it's after the painting Cabello Blanco in El Salon by Jose Marino Villa. A white horse dances on two legs. Her vanilla tail curls like smoke, points at the blossom of a scarlet chair, opened wide and ready to take you in its arms. A cross is lost on graying walls, and a woman in a navy dress, let's call her Reason, walks out into a burning forest. The quiet part of my heart that doesn't ask how long will you stay. And this is the picture, if anyone wants to see it. We had to write an ekphrastic poem based off an image we brought. And I totally botched that for Spanish surrealist painter's name. Thank you, though.
Thank you, Emily. That was beautiful, as always. Thanks, everybody. What a great night. I know I fumbled my words a few times, but sure, hey, what can you do? I did my best, and I enjoyed listening to you all very much, especially our guest poet, Kubis Muhlmann. Thank you.